marriage as a spiritual path.
The passion for life that we all seek is nothing that we get from someone else. It's nothing that we get from life. It stems from what we give to life. I don't care whether you are making someone a cup of coffee or cleaning somebody's desk or making love with someone. The joy, the high, the power lies in what you give to it. And until you know that in life, I don't think there's any success. And I think when you do know that, you're halfway home. But some people just want to talk around and around and around and around and never point at themselves. Never ask that question, what am I not giving?
If you're with somebody right now and you're not having a great sex life, don't examine your sex life. Examine your relationship. Ask yourself if you're loving your partner enough, if you're feeling loved enough, if you're communicating enough, if you have old resentments you haven't dealt with, if you're growing enough as a human being, if you've healed a lot of the wounds from childhood you brought in. If you take care of those things and then you still don't have a great sex life, then you can get a few tips. But if you don't take care of the true foundation for intimacy, all those superficial techniques aren't going to do anything. They're really not.
Well, in order to have passion in a relationship, I think you need to be able to live a passionate life generally. I don't think that any of these things can be done just within the relationship itself if it's not in life. We have to be passionate in our work, passionate in our community life, passionate in our relationship to nature, living in a place we feel some passion for, having an intimacy with the place where we live and really loving it. And if we don't love it, then maybe go to find some place you can love. Or if you can't go anywhere, and if you hate the place, that's passion. But do something with it, you know, be passionate with it. The worst thing is to just be numb, which is so characteristic of modern times.
The spiritual quality, the spiritual potential in a relationship is really fascinating and really very powerful. So I'm in a relationship now with my partner, and I want to be connected to her, or I want to be connected to him. I am frustrated when we experience alienation, when we experience anger, when we're not making love, when we're not talking, when we have these long silences, or I'm frustrated when we're yelling and screaming and so forth all the time. And I've analyzed the patterns of complaints behind fights, and they all are, we're not connected. We want to be connected. And the way that I've figured out how to help partners do that is with a communication device called dialogue. Dialogue is a way of talking in which, as I talk to you, you mirror back to me what you hear me saying. And you mirror it back accurately, and you don't put anything of yourself into it. You let me come into being for you. You let me experience myself existing in your presence, and you're just mirroring it. And then once I come into being, you say to me, you know, you make sense. In other words, I don't only exist, but I'm validated. My truth is not judged. The truth of my meanness, of my I-ness, is beyond your evaluation, so that I have nothing to defend. I can be really safe with you. Now, when I get to that point of feeling safe with you, my energy begins to flow again. I can breathe, I can relax, and you know, the more you are empathic with me, the safer I become. The more I come back online and I begin to feel connected to you again. And when that connection happens, I, at that simultaneously, feel the universe. And that's what I mean about marriage or a committed partnership as a spiritual path.
If you don't have passion in your relationship, don't go outside the relationship to find passion. Here are skills to create passion in your relationship. There's reasons why the passion has gone away. A woman might feel neglected. She needs to take responsibility to ask for what she wants in a way that doesn't offend the man. A man might feel rejected or criticized in the relationship. He needs to learn those things to do, which is generally listen to what she's feeling, do romantic things to open her up again where she is responsive to you and the passion can be there. There are reasons reasons passion goes away, and going outside the relationship to regain passion is only reinforcing that reason. My partner doesn't love me, they have to be turned on to somebody else. That's certainly not going to make a woman feel cherished. As a man, I'm certainly not going to be very impressed if my wife's getting turned on to somebody else instead of me. It's an actual discipline, just like you have a spiritual practice. Monogamy is the primary spiritual practice associated with marriage. That's really what separates a marriage from any other relationship, is you say, yeah, I'll share my love with other people, I share my mind with other people, I even share my money with other people, but I don't share my sexual energy with anybody. That's just for my wife. That's where we unite on the physical level. And we make the mistake of thinking what my partner doesn't know won't hurt them. I'll just do this. But the reality is, your partner does know, everybody knows. On a certain level, you feel something's missing, something's missing.
I think in Fear of Flying I said that nothing was so bland as marriage when it became like Velveeta cheese, and that you didn't want Velveeta cheese. After 5 years of marriage, I was restless for a cloven-hoofed, creamy camembert. Typically, food metaphors. I always use food metaphors. Food and sex, it's all the same thing in my imagination, I guess. The big problem with marriage, as far as I can, sex and marriage, is that marriage tends to become about arrangements. I'll pick up the dog at the vet, you'll take the car to be fixed. You know, I'll drive the kid to school, you'll do this. And married couples are so busy managing their lives that they tend to eliminate any place where you can giggle and laugh and have fun together and, you know, lick each other all over and make love and all those things. The space gets lost. The space for that gets lost. The space to talk to each other gets lost, as a matter of fact. So that's the danger.
Marriage is the way you treat your partner every single day. And it's a huge commitment. It's not a commitment you make once or renew once a year. It's a commitment you make every day, many, many, many times. And I think a lot of people are roommates, but they're not really married. Because marriage means I'm committed to learning everything I can to be a better partner, to be a better mate, to be a better person. I will do whatever it takes to make this relationship work. I understand that you are my teacher. And I am yours, and that the purpose of a relationship, and this is just the crucial point that I love to teach people, the purpose of a relationship isn't to necessarily make me happy, it's to help me grow.
Nature tricks us by stimulating us with a taste of our own being when we see the person with whom we can grow the most and recover our wholeness. It tricks us, it's sort of like a drug. I call it an anesthetic, a taste of what we really are like in order to hook us into this person so that we can grow with them enough to experience this all the time. So that's where romantic love can go. Real love is a decision to commit myself to your welfare, to hold your being as unconditionally my commitment, so that you become my center. Not that I disappear, but you become a priority, you become my center, and we work together until our relationship with each other feels all the time like it felt when we met. That means we go into the valley of the shadow of death until we finish that work, and then we enter into paradise. And I believe there is a paradise. In fact, I know there's a paradise. I know couples who've been there.
Here's the truth. Bad marriage is boring. Unfulfilled marriage is boring. Marriage without honesty is boring. Marriage without growth is boring. And so you can think, well, that means monogamy is boring. That's absolutely an absurd and superficial conclusion. True marriage is the most exciting, the most dynamic, the most challenging, the least boring thing in the entire world. If you're not growing, you're going to get bored with yourself and your partner. And novelty with somebody new for 6 months or a year or 2 years will take care of it. And you're going to be right back to the same situation again. Your partner's job is not to keep you interested. Your job is to keep yourself interesting and growing by being a dynamic human being. Not thinking that the marriage is supposed to somehow fill you up. But the marriage, every day, by definition, is based on who you bring to the marriage bed, who you bring to the kitchen table. And if who you're bringing, meaning yourself, isn't fulfilled, isn't full of love, isn't full of passion, isn't full of enthusiasm, isn't full of courage for life, of course you're going to have a boring marriage. But it's not because marriage is boring, it's because you're boring. It's because you're not leading your life as a true spiritual warrior.
The Greeks had a wonderful god called the Dionysus, who was the great sexual god. I say that because I could say that about every god or goddess. They were the great sexual deities. So the Dionysian experience of sex, this great sexual way of being in the world, has to be simultaneously an affirmation of death as well as life. It goes back to the notion that the only way to really be a person and to have a sense of self is to give up yourself, is to give that up. And to have the security, I guess, to say, okay, have it, take me. And to be able to give wholeheartedly to passion and to give wholeheartedly to the other person's passion. And in that release of self, there can be a tremendous recovery or gaining of solidity and grounding and a sense of personhood that can come from that.
But most people have never been taught how to create lasting passion in a relationship. One of the greatest challenges in life is not getting what you want, but it's continuing to want what you have. See, it's easy to long for, lust for, desire what you don't have. Enlightenment, spirituality, is learning to embrace what you have. And when you can sexually long for and desire the woman you have in your life, or a woman longing for the man that she has, that's an enormous accomplishment. Few people achieve that. That's greatness. That's bringing God's light, love, into the physical body and loving your partner more as the years pass. So it is possible in marriages today to keep the passion alive, but we have to be able to identify what do women need today, what do men need today, and by identifying those needs and satisfying them, guess what? This fantasy that we have that a couple can be married and have lasting passion can actually become a reality.
True love.
I don't think that we can find the answers that we're looking for in terms of romantic love and sexual love if we're only looking at romantic and sexual love. I think the problem that we're having in the area of romance and sex and all those issues is that we don't live deeply enough. We don't commit deeply enough to the moment, not just to another person, but to ourselves, to life in general, to the moment in which we live. And so I think that it's the broader love that if we turn our attention to that, changes us as people. I think the love we need to consider is the love that says, wait a minute, we're living on the earth, a world in which, as beautiful as it is in some places, and as beautiful as God knows it can be, 35,000 children under the age of 6 die every day, basically needlessly, of hunger. Now, when that has affected you, life takes on a more, I believe, sort of raw quality, a more fierce quality, and then that changes you as a person. And then we have to honor the broader scope of what it means to be alive in order to find any wisdom, whether it's political, business, financial, or relationship-based. All those things are just reflections, they're just facets of a more central diamond, which is what it means to be alive on this earth. And that's a radical transition for us to make. So I think the idea of two people joining together in order to wrap our arms around each other, but with enough space that it includes the entire world. Not only children, but community and country and planet. That's the love that's going to save the world. And that's the love which clues us in to success in the original romance. That's what I believe, and that's what I see in my life when relationship works. It's because there's a common endeavor, something much bigger than, you know, he said, she said, more small-time drama.
It was a turning point for me when I realized that my wife really was very different from me. We got into this big argument at a time when she was very vulnerable and she needed my support more than anything. She'd been in pain all day, she was feeling distressed and needed to talk to me. But as we talked, we just got in an argument, so I did what men typically do. If conversation isn't working, then what you do is you walk away. And why would you continue doing something that's not working? He sees I'm just getting madder and madder, and I'm going to say mean things, and I don't want to do that. So I started to go for the door. And she said, John, please don't leave. Just stay. You don't have to say anything. Now, that I could do, because I knew conversation wasn't working, so I could stay if that was important to her. She says, all you have to do is stay. And I stayed. And then she says, would you just hold me in your arms? You don't have to say anything, because we'll just argue. All I need is to feel your arms around me, and I'll feel so much better. I went, well, that's all you need. I can do that. And I went over and I held her in my arms, and she just wept in my arms. She had so many feelings. She didn't talk much about it, just cried and cried, let the feelings come up. And I was really mad before that, and suddenly my feelings softened. Why? Because I was helping. One of the hardest challenges for women to make relationships work is to know that sometimes you have to ask a man for support. Because if she doesn't understand that men are from Mars, she feels like, what am I having to beg for support? Why doesn't he automatically give it to me? Can't he see I'm in distress? Why doesn't he just walk over here, wrap his arms around me, and just hold me? That's what I need. But as a man, I didn't know that. When it worked, and I held her and she cried in my arms, I was perplexed. I said, she really must be different, because from my side, if I'm upset, the last thing I want her to do is come over and hold me. I want to just go for a walk, go for a drive, spend some alone time, go to my cave, be by myself for a while. Then I might come out and like to be, like some affection or whatever. I don't necessarily feel like I want to be held. So the last thing that comes to my mind is I want my wife to hold me. Why would I think that she wants that of me? Which is why it's so important for men to understand. Women are from Venus. They're very different at certain times. And you need to learn how to tread lightly.
So one thing what one can do, I think, to keep one's sex life really vibrant in a marriage is to cultivate a sense of the otherness and really enjoy and appreciate the difference of the other person. Actually, after all, the word sex means to make the difference, you know, it's based on difference in a sense, and it has that difference that's so interesting. Maybe some people go out looking for the anonymous person because they want a different person, but our partner can be different. We can cultivate that sense of difference all the time and hold back our need, of whatever need that is, to expect our partner to be just like us.
All across the human spectrum, what we need is the growth toward the acknowledgement that you are not me and I am not you, and that's okay. It's what was called by Martin Buber, the great Jewish mystical theologian, the I-thou relationship, which can only be created by dialogue, where the between us becomes a clear space, not fused by who each other is. And that what we really have to accept is, I'm not you and you're not me. We are ourselves in connection and in relationship. And to maintain connection with distinction is one of the great challenges, I think, of human consciousness, not just of this culture or some other culture, but of the evolution of consciousness itself. To maintain wholeness and connection with distinction and respect and without judgment. I think the surrendering probably of judgment would be the most salvific thing that human beings would be able to do for each other.
And so I don't know how to find words for this. Nobody has been able to find adequate words to describe this. But somehow I think we have to open ourselves to the realization that our own longing to love and to be loved will never be fully satisfied and probably shouldn't be. That as long as we are open to its continuing exploration, and we are on a way toward fulfilling our love, but let's not expect it to be over with and sealed and say, as they say these days, I've done that, you know. It's not that. It's not over with then. You keep going. And this very process of letting love be an open-ended thing and not limited to another person or to anything finite, I think is the very essence of the religious spirit, the very essence of what religion is about. It's about letting one's love open up to the point where your life is fashioned by the fact that you have not closed off your capacity to love.
I think probably what everybody wants is to have somebody deeply know them and accept them. I mean, I think what everybody wants is to show some loved person all the tatters inside the coat and have that person say, you are beautiful. It's beautiful. I mean, we all want that. We want to reveal to somebody all the things we never revealed to anybody and have that person say, it's okay. I love you. You know, all the things that you have felt so upset about are not upsetting to me. I think you're wonderful. So I think we do seek very much to be known, and I think generally we fall in love with people because we think they know us. We think they know us, and that is really the secret. That's the thing that unlocks love. Somebody knows us, really knows us for who we are, and sticks around.
I remember I was finishing this book, The Real Rules, which was a kind of very bold and courageous answer to a book, The Rules, that basically told women to manipulate men and lie and do all kinds of things in order to get what they wanted. And I was really appalled, and I had to write this book, and I locked myself in my room for weeks to write it. And I was writing all about not trying to trick a man into loving you, not trying to have to look perfect or act perfect or hide parts of your personality that he'll find objectionable, that that's just old thinking, and that true love has nothing to do with that. And I was really in the fervor of the book, and all of a sudden there was a knock on the door, and my husband, who I hadn't seen in probably a day, came in with beautiful flowers and this card. And I opened the card, and he basically said, "I love you because you're exactly who you are. And if you had ever tried any of these games on me, I would have walked away. And I love you because of your truth, not in spite of it. And I love you just sitting here, like you're sitting here with your dirty hair and your glasses and your sweatsuit," though I'm sure he was happy when I finally changed out of it. And I just wept, because in that moment, it was everything that I treasure as a woman. To be able to be loved for me, to not have to worry all the time about how I look, or if I'm doing something right, or if I'm tiptoeing around him perfectly and not upsetting him, but to just be me, boldly, courageously, honestly, Barbara, and to know that he knows my essence and he loves it. He may not always like it, sometimes it may plug him in, but that he loves it, that he's committed to it, that he's honoring it, and he knows who he got. And he knows why we're together. I worked very hard to get to the place where I loved myself enough to present myself like that and find a man who would see me. I never gave a lot of the men I was with in the past a chance to do that, because by the time I was with them, I cut off so many pieces of myself. And if they even looked at me the wrong way, I would chop that off, that I wasn't genuinely me. I knew if I were, they would have left. So this whole relationship, this whole marriage, has been bold in just being me, and therefore it's totally satisfying, because I know I'm loved because of who I am and who I'm growing into every day.
The Quest Love Trilogy, Volume 1, Love, Passion, and Soul, was adapted for audio by Simon & Schuster Audio. Post-production was by Common Mode, Paul Fowley, Technical Director. The audio version of Quest Love, Volume 1, was produced by Florence Barreau Adams. For Zolar Entertainment Corporation, Quest Love, Volume 1, was produced, directed, and hosted by Lily Fournier. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, The Quest Life Trilogy, Volume 1, Discovering Your Human Potential, Volume 2, The Spiritual Path to Success, and Volume 3, Energy, Power, and Spirit.